Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to EduRent First and 15. I'm very proud to have the actually exiting president of the IACI Juniors, Dr. Ivonne Aguiluz-Gracia from Spain. Good morning, Ivonne.
Good morning, Buya.
We had this amazing topic prepared since a few months, and the collaboration between the Association Asociano and the IACI Juniors started a few months ago. So we decided to have both the IACI president and the exiting president, Ivonne, for a talk during our ground rounds. Today, Ivonne is going to talk about the nasal allergen challenge and how much could impact our clinical and research during our allergic rhinitis diagnosis. So I will, after this introduction, I will lead the talk to Ivonne. And at the end, I would please once again ask all the participants to ask questions after the talk. Please go ahead.
So thank you very much, Buya. It's a great pleasure for me to present this topic, which is very much related to my both my clinical and research activity. And also thank you very much to the Asociano Association to show the interest to collaborate with the EAKI, with the EAKI Junior members, and also to include these topics about the nasal inflammation in this very interesting program of adherent webinars, including both the surgical aspect and this more related to nasal inflammation, which is also very relevant for ENT doctors, and of course for allergies, and is one of the areas where the allergies and the ENT doctors, we can collaborate more and we can do better things for the benefit of our patients. So I want to discuss today about this procedure, the nasal allergen challenge, that has been described and used for many decades, but in recent years it has gained significant attention and attention of the process. Because this is crucial to interpret the results and to rely on what we see. So this is the outline of what I want to discuss today with you. First, starting with an introduction, then describing the current uses of the nasal allergen challenge, and then the main part of my talk will actually discuss the methodology, because it's the main important aspect in order to implement it in the clinical practice and also to obtain reliable results that help us to take clinical decisions. That is the final goal, even though it is also used for research, but I mean, in this talk I will focus mainly on the clinical applications, and then I will end up with summary and conclusions. So what is the nasal allergen challenge? The nasal allergen challenge is a medical procedure aiming to evaluate the response of the nasal mucosa to a controlled allergen exposure. And with this definition, we can use the procedure both as a clinical tool, as a research tool, as I mentioned before. So very recently in 2018, EAKI published, after a work of more than 1 year of several years of a task force of the standardization of the nasal allergen challenge, this position paper was published in Allergy and released. And the rationale why this work was needed is to try to address the unmet needs in the methodology of the nasal allergen challenge, because up to the publication of this document, the allergen dose and the quality of the dose was very variable. The allergen application technique was not defined. It was questioned whether there was a need for a titration process, meaning if we have to administer diluted doses of the allergen before the full dose of the allergen, or we could go for the full dose from the first administration, whether we needed to provoke one or two nostrils, unilateral or bilateral nasal challenge. It was also a big debate. And also what was the ideal method to assess both subjective and objective parameters of the nasal allergen. Current uses of the nasal allergen challenge. So this is the second part. So of course, we use the nasal allergen challenge to diagnose allergic rhinitis. And this diagnosis of allergic rhinitis can be done with different purposes. Sometimes we aim to evaluate the clinical significance of individual allergens in pollen-sensitized patients, and also to solve discrepancies between the clinical history and the IgE sensitization test. So these two aims actually go usually together. So if we have a polysensitized patients, we don't know if all those sensitization are genuine sensitization on chlororeactivity, and therefore we are not sure about the clinical relevance of those sensitization. And in many cases, the patient is sensitized, for instance, to seasonal allergens and only and has symptoms during all the year. And we don't know if that is related to sensitization, to nasal hyperreactivity, to anatomical disorder, to everything at the same time. So there are many confounding factors. And to solve these discrepancies and to assess the clinical significance of sensitization, we can do the nasal allergen challenge. In general, we don't do that in every patient. We do that immunotherapy. And we need to decide the composition of allergen immunotherapy. And in this, to this end, the nasal challenge can be very helpful. There are other specific phenotypes of allergic rhinitis, like local allergic rhinitis or occupational rhinitis, where we really need the nasal allergen challenge. It's the only way to diagnose them. In the local allergic rhinitis, because the patients are not sensitized, they have negative skin prick tests and serum allergen-specific IgE, and the disease is only recognized through the challenge. And in occupational rhinitis, sometimes we can find sensitization, but for legal consequences of the diagnosis and also legal and economical consequences of the diagnosis, it is needed to have a confirmation diagnosis. And the nasal challenge is the only way, is the gold standard to confirm the clinical relevance of a sensitization. So in many cases, the challenge is also needed. Also, sometimes we want to evaluate if the patient, in a patient with ocular symptoms and nasal symptoms, we want to evaluate if ocular symptoms are due to a nasal ocular reflex or other mechanisms, or the patient has a true sensitization, conjunctival sensitization. So to evaluate the nature of the ocular symptoms, the procedure can be also helpful. Then other indications beyond diagnosis will be to evaluate the effect of allergen immunotherapy in allergic rhinitis. And not all of allergen immunotherapy, of any treatment used for allergic rhinitis, theoretically we could use the nasal allergen challenge. So to follow up and monitor the clinical response. So we perform a nasal challenge before and after, and we see with the treatment, we see differences. That is, of course, mostly used for research, for clinical trials, but at least in theory, it could be also used to assess the response to a treatment also in the clinic. So, of course, the procedure has several contraindications. Some of them are temporary, others are absolute. Acute nasal ocular inflammation, like the common cold, of course, you cannot do a nasal challenge if the patient has a common cold. The surgery of the nose or paranasal sinuses, it is recommended to wait 1 month and a half, 2 months before performing the nasal allergen challenge. If the patient is pregnant or she is breastfeeding, also in the position paper of the ACI, is not recommended to perform the challenge in the weeks after a vaccination against infectious agents. So you need to wait 1 week and then you can perform the nasal challenge. So all these contraindications are temporary. What about absolute contraindications? The condition severely affecting the nasal patency. We can all think about the septum perforation, for instance, severe airway disease, especially asthma, but also COPD, and in general, the other severe and stable hair or systemic disease, especially more than severe and stable. No? We cannot perform the procedure. And because of methodological reasons, the nasal challenge cannot be performed in preschool children because we need some degree of cooperation and they are not able to provide it. And whenever or wherever the extracts are not available, we have to have good quality extract of at minimum quality. If not, we cannot interpret anything of this. So, but as I mentioned, the challenge, the nasal allergen challenge, is also a research tool. And it can be used in clinical research to evaluate the efficacy of a therapy for allergic rhinitis in a clinical trial. For instance, in another EAACI position paper published in 2014 about the standardization of clinical outcomes used in allergen immunotherapy trials, the nasal allergen challenge is included as a valuable outcome because you can evaluate the amount of allergen tolerated by the patient before and after the allergen immunotherapy, for instance. And this is a study published by our group in 2017. 6 months of allergen immunotherapy versus placebo in local allergic rhinitis patients. You can see here that the patients who receive the placebo the nasal tolerance of the allergen doesn't increase. In those who receive allergen immunotherapy, they were able to tolerate much higher concentration of allergen. And this was done through a regular nasal allergen test. So it's a well-established tool for clinical research. What about translational or more basic research? It can be used because the nasal allergen challenge allows you to collect sample before and after the procedure or at different time points during the procedure. And you can, if you collect nasal secretions before and after the nasal allergen challenge, you can measure inflammatory mediators like immunoglobulin cells, cytokines, etc. But what is mostly published in the literature, for instance, to measure eosinophil mediators in the nasal secretions or mast cell mediators. Eosinophil mediators, for example, eosinophil cationic protein, mast cell mediator tryptase. You can measure those molecules in the secretions, and you can also say something and gain insight into the mechanisms of the disease, etc. Also, the nasal allergen challenge allows you to collect not only secretions, but also nasal biopsies and different time points during the nasal challenge. For instance, this is a study that we conducted in Norway. So we took biopsies before the nasal challenge, and then we went for the nasal allergen challenge, and we took biopsies after the nasal challenge and different time points. And in this case, we were able to measure in by immunohistochemistry different cells that we were interested about. So, it, of course, it's also useful for translational research. So, now that I have gone through the uses, I want to discuss more in depth the methodology, which is the main aim of this webinar. So, preliminary consideration. So, the timing of the nasal allergen challenge. It also depends on the allergen we are testing. For seasonal allergens, it is recommended to perform the nasal allergen challenge out of the pollen season, at least 1 month or before or after the season, so to be sure that inflammation has gone down. For perennial allergens, it's more difficult to decide the perfect timing because, of course, they are present all the time. But even they are present during all the year, there are seasonal variations. So for instance, the mites are present all the year, but during the summertime, in general, there are less than in the autumn, for instance. So it will be preferable to perform a nasal challenge with mites during the summertime. So also the room where the procedure is performed is important. It has to have specific conditions. It has not to be contaminated by other substances. This is important because in many hospitals, the room where the nasal challenge is performed is the same room where, for instance, the methacholine provocation is performed for asthma patients. So if the patients are inhaling at the same time other products, that can also alter the results. The room has to have a controlled temperature and humidity and quiet and calm atmosphere. I can tell you, for instance, in my hospital, the room where the nasal challenge are done, the door must be always closed because it has to have, like, let's say, homogeneous and conditions. It cannot be changing all the time because this also affects the response of the nose. So it is recommended that the patients acclimatize for the room at least 15 minutes before the challenge is started. So there has to be a process of acclimatization of the nasal mucosa to the room conditions. Of course, it has to be performed by trained personnel with access to rescue medication and also ideally with access and a spirometer, even though the nasal provocation, as I will show later, is a very, very safe technique. So we very recently published a very big study of the safety of this technique, and I will explain later that it's extremely safe even in asthma patients. So this also helps the clinical implementation of the techniques. So, of course, it is recommended that the patients have a washout period of the different drugs. So this is also a consensus document published by the American Academy of Allergy in 2018. And here they recommend washout periods for the different drugs that usually patients with rhinitis takes. Of course, antihistamines and corticosteroids, topical or either systemic, but also other drugs like aspirin, etc. So I am interested, for instance, in leukotriene modifiers because leukotrienes, anti-leukotrienes are usually, I mean, their indication is asthma. They don't have any other indication. But I believe that we all have the feeling that in some patients, they can also help with the rhinitis symptoms. So in this position paper, they don't recommend any specific washout period for leukotrienes, but I would recommend also at least 1 week of not taking them before performing a nasal challenge because I think that they have also effects over nasal inflammation. Of course, alcohol or tobacco should be avoided at least 1-2 days. So these are the preliminary considerations. So let's move to the next step, but this very crucial step, the allergy solutions and the application of the allergens. So the test solutions, we can have different types of test solutions. They can be used as ready-to-use solutions, already diluted. We buy them when they are already diluted. Or what we can buy is a lyophilizate, like the powder, and then we have to dilute the powder to bring it to an aqueous solution. So this is important to consider that both the ready-to-use solution or the lyophilizate, they have very tight expiration deadlines. Once we open them, they have to be used usually in 1 month, something like that. So you if you don't perform nasal challenge on a regular basis and you want to perform for a certain period, it's recommended that you cluster all the patients over 1 week or 2 weeks, because if after that, you will not be able to use this solution. You will have to throw them away and use new ones. And they are quite expensive. So it's important that to cluster the patients because they have tight expiration deadlines. These solutions are isotonic. They have pH neutral. They should be stored at 4 degrees. And because they should be stored at 4 degrees to preserve the proteins, we need also to bring them to room temperature before use. So the patient needs to acclimatize to the room, but also we need to have the allergens acclimatize themselves, because if we apply a very cold allergen, that will produce an specific reactivity, of course. It's not recommended to use the skin prick test extracts for nasal provocation because they are glycerinated, and this is irritative for the nasal mucosa. So this is strongly discouraged to use the skin prick test for the nasal provocation. In the acuposition paper from 2018, the allergen is recommended that the allergen concentration of the extracts is given in international system units, micrograms per milliliter, for instance. But unfortunately, this is quite strange, because most of the manufacturers use their own concentration units and they are brand specific. So many times they are usually standardized by biological power rather than through concentration, the micrograms per milliliter. So sometimes it's hard to know the exact amount of allergen you are administering. What about allergen titration? Allergen titration means giving increasing doses, concentration of the allergen before the maximum concentration. I mean, in general, it's not recommended for the routine clinic. It can be done with research purposes and to assess the response to a therapy, but in the routine clinics, usually, at least in the position paper of the ACT, is not recommended. Allergen application techniques. So there are different methods to apply the allergen to the nostril. This is the Spanish guidelines for nasal provocation. They are a bit old, from 2011, but there is still some interesting information in this document. It can be applied by a syringe, by a nose dropper, micropipette of nasal spray. I would say that micropipette and nasal spray are the most commonly used techniques, but also other more strange things like impregnated cotton or impregnated disc placed in the head of the lower turbinate for 10 minutes, something like that. So in the active position paper from 2018, what we recommend is the nasal spray, but other techniques are also accepted as valid to apply the allergy. So here we have several examples. Of course, the nasal spray is what I think is most commonly used and what most easy to understand. The micropipette, that is what we use in our department in Malaga, actually. We open the nostril with a rhinoscope and then we administer 100 microliters in the head of the lower turbinate by this micropipette, and it's usually easy to perform. If you have the impregnating disc, as you can see in the lower part of the slide, you have to place it in the head of the lower turbinate for 10 minutes. But of course, it's more difficult to put it to be sure that you have placed it in the correct area, etc. So the application technique is also important. And in the acuposition paper, because they favor the spray, they explain very thoroughly how the spray has to be administered. So what is recommended is a bilateral application by a spray vial with a 15 microliters nozzle. So there were big discussions about if bilateral or unilateral application, but finally it was decided that bilateral was more reliable, and this is the current standard. So of course you have to test the sprite prior to the challenge, just in the room, do it like that to make sure that it will deliver actually the 50 microliters. And you administer 2 puffs of 50 microliters per nostril, 2 here and 2 here. So normally it is recommended that the first puff is administered with a sprite placed in parallel to the floor of the nostril, and then the second puff in a 45 degree position heading to the medium meatus, for instance. We need also some patient's collaboration. The patient is told to breathe deeply before the application, to hold breath during the application, and to exhale profoundly after the application. And this method will allow us to prevent aerosol penetration of the lower airways. And one very simple thing for every nasal application in a spray is to avoid always the nasal septum. As saying that for a nasal corticosteroids as therapeutic agents, we have always to try to move the spray, the nozzle of the spray, against the septum. Okay. So, and the next tricky point is how we measure the outcomes. This is very important. So in the position paper by Eaki, it is said that the evaluation should always include one objective and one subjective parameter, because each parameter assesses different aspects of the nasal response. So for subjective parameters, we have the symptom score. For objective parameters, we need a measurement of the nasal pattern. So, symptom score. We have different types of scales to grade the symptoms. We have the total nasal symptom score, which is a 12-point scale, measuring 4 nasal symptoms, rhinorrhea, sneezing, obstruction, and itching. Then, as you know, in the 80s, we have 2 scores, the Linder score and the Level score that were proposed in the 80s. And apart from these 4 nasal symptoms, they also include an evaluation of the ocular symptoms that many times occur in parallel to the nasal symptoms. And the score, of course, the ARIA guidelines propose us the visual analog scale, which is standardized, and also includes evaluation of the 4 main nasal symptoms. What about the objective assessment of the nasal patency? In the EAKI position paper from 2018, 4 methods are considered acceptable to perform the nasal challenge. One is the peak nasal inspiratory flow, then is the acoustic rhinometry, this is the anterior rhinomanometry, and the 4-phase rhinomanometry. Each of them has their advantages and disadvantages. Of course, the peak nasal inspiratory flow is the easiest and cheapest, but it has also some disadvantages because require collaboration, more collaboration from the patient, relies on the lung function, and this is based on my personal experience. I think it's less reliable. There are more variability among repeated measurement if you use the peak nasal inspiratory flow. So, I mean, in my opinion, it's better than nothing, but from the 4, it's the less recommended. This is my opinion. Of course, the other 4, in general, are more specific, more sensitive, more reliable, but require technical resources and trained personnel. That is a great disadvantage because in the peak nasal inspiratory flow, you can perform it very quickly, and the same physician can do it with the patient quickly. For the others, usually you will need more personnel. That is an obvious disadvantage. Of course, as you know, they measure different things. In the rhinometry, we measure volumes. In the rhinomanometry, we measure resistance. So it's not exactly the same. So, and next, how do we interpret the outcomes, which is also tricky? So in the position paper by Eaki, it is very clearly said that we can consider a test positive if we have a very strong variation in objective parameters in the nasal pathogens, very strong variation in subjective parameters. Only with one of the 2 parameters, if there is a very big variation, you can consider the test positive. But if you have like moderate variations in both the objective and subjective parameters, you can also consider the test positive. So there are different ways to get positivity. So of course, now the most important thing is, okay, what is high variation? What is moderate variation? That is not fully established at all. This is only recommendations, but I mean, are most basically in experience of experts, but more than in real true evidence, okay? So in general, a clear positivity for subjective measurement For instance, the symptom score, if the patient score higher than 5 or higher than 55 in the VAS, this is clearly positive. But if there is an increase to 3, that is moderately positive. And with the objective parameters, in general, it's considered a clear positivity, a variation higher than 40%, and a moderate positivity, a variation of 20% or higher. So if we have these points, 5 points or more than 40% separately, we can consider a test positive. But if we combine more than 3 points and a variation higher than 20%, both occurring in the same patient, then we can consider also the test positive. Of course, there are potential sources of error of both false positive results and false negative results. There are many different situations that can lead us to a misinterpretation of the test, but I want to highlight in false positive result the presence of the nasal cycle. That is always a situation that occurs very often, that one patient, for instance, have a very high variation in one of the nostrils, a decrease in the volume in one of the nostrils together with an increase of the volume in the other nostril. This is most likely related to the nasal cycle, and this should not be considered positive. So there has to be a decrease, bilateral decrease in the volume, for instance. So this is how it should be. And the false negative result, of course, the most common situation that arises in the clinic is that the patient has not kept properly the washout periods for the different drugs. And this can, but there are, of course, many other possibilities, like lack of adaptation to the room climate, that the patient, as soon as he or she enters the room, is performed the nasal challenge. That can also create problems. Okay, and then from a practical point of view, what is the procedure of the nasal challenge? So this is a general procedure with a general basis, and then I will describe it more in detail. We need to perform a baseline measurement that will be the reference for further measurements. After the baseline measurement, we go to a challenge control challenge measurement, meaning that we need to challenge the patients with the diluent of the allergen, without the allergen, only the diluent, before administering the allergen, because we need to control for nasal hyperreactivity. So before administering any allergen, we need to exclude that the patient has nasal hyperreactivity in this specific moment. And then, after the control challenge, we go for the allergen challenge. For the symptom score, we only perform one determination per measurement, so one determination at baseline, one determination after the control challenge, and one determination after the allergen challenge. But for the nasal patency, we do three sequential determinations. For instance, if we use acoustic rhinometry, we measure 3 times to limit technical variability, and then with the 3 times, we perform an average, and we consider the average as the measurement. Okay? So this is the extended procedure. First of all, the patient arrives and we have to check that meets requirements, that the washout periods have been correctly kept, etc. Then we wait for 15 minutes for the patient to acclimatize to the room, and then we perform the baseline measurement, both subjective and objective assessment. After the baseline measurement, we administer the control solution. We can use the diluent of the allergen or saline serum, isotonic saline serum. We wait for 10 minutes, and after 10 minutes, we measure again subjective and objective assessment. So if there has been no change or very little change, we can proceed with the administration of the allergen. But if the patient develops a positive response with the control challenge, we have to stop the challenge that day, and we have to reschedule the patient for a different day. That is recommended. So if the control challenge is negative, we go ahead with the administration of the allergen. Then we wait 10 minutes, and after 10 minutes, we measure again the subjective and objective parameters. If the test is positive after 10 minutes, we can consider the test positive, we stop the procedure. If it is negative, then we can wait another 10 minutes and make a second measurement of both objective and subjective parameters. And the second measurement can be positive, and we consider the test positive. And if it's negative, we can say, okay, you are not allergic to this allergen, whatever other problem you have, this is not the problem or the cause of your nasal symptoms. Okay? So you see, in every procedure, we consider application, sorry, the nasal hyperreactivity. We have to exclude nasal hyperreactivity. We know that nasal hyperreactivity occurs in every phenotype of rhinitis, but it's variable. So the patients can have more nasal hyperreactivity in some periods than in others. So sometimes you cannot perform the allergen challenge because the patient always has nasal hyperreactivity. But in most cases, if you schedule the patient, we do in our department up to 3 times. If in 3 repeated measurements the patient has nasal hyperreactivity, we give up. But usually we schedule the patient for a different day or a different period of the year with the less allergen is enough, and you can finally perform the allergen provocation. In the position paper by Aki, it's recommended that you should consider positive only immediate responses, immediate, let's say, during the half an hour after the allergen application, or dual responses. Dual responses, and they have an immediate response and a delayed response. There are very few patients who have an isolated delayed reaction, isolated without immediate reactions. That has been described that can occur up to 12 hours after allergen application. This is, in the position paper, this is recommended. It's not recommended to consider this positive. If the patient at home reports a delayed reaction, is recommended to repeat the test again, but not it should not be considered positive only on the basis of a delayed reaction. And in general, as in any other procedure, after the procedure, doesn't matter if it has been positive or negative, it is recommended that the patient is in the hospital or in the clinic at least for 30 minutes to be sure that nothing will happen. So this is our latest published article about nasal allergen provocation that came up a couple of months ago. So it evaluates the safety and the reproducibility of the test. So this assessment is based in 11,500 procedures performed in more than 500 children and almost 6,000 adults. And from these individuals, more than 1,500 had asthma symptoms. And we found extremely good safety outcomes. The test, either if you apply the allergen by micropipette of nasal spray, is extremely safe. 99.97% of the procedures were well tolerated. So it's extremely safe, which is very important for the clinical implementation of the test. And about the reproducibility, regarding the reproducibility, we performed the test using level score as subjective parameter and acoustic rhinometry as measurement of the nasal patency. And the reproducibility is also very high, 97.32%, with very high positive and negative predictive values. Okay, so you can see in this picture that in our department, we perform the test administering a single allergen per session of multiple allergen per session. This is also controversial. In the Aki position paper, they only recommend one allergen per session, but we have described the department where I work now in 2011 described a protocol for performing challenge with multiple allergens in the same session. And this is also in the Spanish guidelines, it is recommended to only administer one per session, as in the European guidelines. But we published this article in 2011, as I said, and performing nasal challenge with multiple aeroallergens is a good screening method for local allergic rhinitis, meaning that if you have the suspicious local allergic rhinitis and you administer up to 4 allergens in the same session and the patient tests negative, you can very easily exclude the diagnosis. You say non-allergic rhinitis. And in one session, the diagnosis is reached. You don't need to reschedule 4 sessions. So it has advantages, especially to rule out, okay, local allergic rhinitis, this challenge with multiple allergens. So, and just to sum up and to conclude, the summary of methodological recommendations is to use always standardized allergen solutions, where we can know more or less what the concentration of the major allergen is, to perform the nasal allergen challenge bilaterally. Then there are 2 methods that are mostly recommended for allergen application, which are the spray and the micropipette. In both of them, we administer 100 microliters. In the spray, we administer 2 pulses of 50, and in the micropipette, directly 100, but finally the patient gets the same amount of allergy. As a to use the visual analog scale and as objective measurement, the 2 methods most recommended, and I'd say most performed, are the active anterior, active rhinomanometry and the acoustic rhinometry. So I think that those two are probably better than the others. And in conclusion, nasal allergen challenge is useful. It's a useful clinical and research tool for allergy rhinitis. There is a need to there is a need of further methodological harmonization of the technique, and the interpretation of the results should rely on the combination of subjective and objective measurement. And thank you very much for your attention. This is our group.
I would like to congratulate you because you basically covered the whole field, and this is very important. And this is basically what we have to do for our teaching program. And that means that each topic should be covered from the start to the end of each one of our diagnoses and the treatment of the diseases. And in fact, there were during your talk few different questions that was basically at the same time replied. And for example, I would like to there was a questions from Spain, and one of our the attendants was actually asking how to proceed with the different brand names that are on the market, what I should use for my clinical therapy and diagnosis, and I will briefly go through all of it. First one, the first question I would like to ask you, of course, you know, we are ENT and we would like to approach to a new dimension, which is research and the clinical aspect of such diseases. In that field, I would like to ask you, what are the implications of these tests? What are the benefits in advantage of a skin prick test of a RAS test? Would you like to recommend not for the local allergic rhinitis, but if you have a systemic, not only nasal symptoms but also ocular symptoms, and in patients who are all also suffering from asthma, what are the best choice that you would recommend?
So I think that, to be completely honest, if we exclude local allergic rhinitis, in the patients systemically sensitized with positive skin prick test, the only moment when you can consider the test is for prescribing allergen immunotherapy. So sure. If you want to, if you don't consider allergen immunotherapy or the patient doesn't want allergen immunotherapy, I wouldn't recommend to go through this laborious process, because I mean the diagnosis of allergic rhinitis can be easily done with a skin prick test. I will say maybe you are not 100% sure about the clinical relevance of a sensitization, but if you are not prescribing immunotherapy, it doesn't really matter, because you will treat the patient the same way with a symptomatic treatment. But if you consider allergen immunotherapy, then in many patients are polysensitized. And sometimes even with a molecular diagnosis, it's not easy to know if they are truly allergic to that allergen or not. Or if you think that there are four sensitizations in the serum that are relevant, you say you cannot prescribe immunotherapy with four different allergens in the same treatment. So you have to decide which allergen do you start with. Sometimes this you can be established by the clinic. The patient can tell you that this trigger is the most important for me, but sometimes it's not possible. And there are very overlapping allergens in the environment, I mean, and it's impossible to differentiate if the patient has, for instance, alternaria and Howdah's mite are mainly overlapping. And if they all increase with dampness, so it's very hard to differentiate them from a pure clinical, asking clinical question to the patient. So apart from local allergic rhinitis, the nasal challenge is useful if you decide to prescribe allergen immunotherapy and the patient is polysensitized. That is the main indication.
This is also covering another question, so you already answered it to that, which was exactly this point. Another one, other questions coming from Argentina. Our colleagues is an allergist, and our colleagues is asking questions about what about the patients that are underwent previous surgery? What would you recommend in those patients?
Previous surgery due to nasal polyps, or
I guess that he's referring to patients that underwent a surgery, like sinus surgery for a chronic rhinosinusitis with nasal polyps. And I do believe in this case he was referring to a consequent also allergic rhinitis due to different and multiple allergens.
With patients with chronic rhinosinusitis with nasal polyps, it's hard to perform the nasal challenge before surgery and after surgery because their anatomy is very altered even before the surgery, or the, not the anatomy, but I mean, it's impossible to measure volumes or very hard to have reliable results. And after the surgery, even more, because, you know, for instance, if you use acoustic rhinometry, you are measuring the 2-6 volume that is supposed to be in the lower turbinate. And if that is altered after the surgery, then you don't know exactly what you are measuring. So it's very, not always impossible, but in most of the cases, we have problems to use this test for patients with chronic rhinosinusitis with nasal polyps, either before or after the surgery. Other thing is the fact that it's what is the role of atopy or allergy in those patients. That this is a very interesting topic. I'm very interested by it. Exactly. Because many of these patients are atopic, but and some of them are really allergic, but others may be atopic but non-allergic. I mean, they might be sensitized, but maybe it's not very relevant, that sensitization. I don't know. I think in most of the cases of these patients, we cannot perform the test. That is true. Other patients who do not have chronic rhinosinusitis but underwent surgery for other reasons, in most cases, we can still perform the test, but always, for instance, septal deviation, we can more or less perform the test, but also always you have to take into account that if the anatomy of the nostril is very changed, that we will have difficulties in interpreting the acoustic rhinometry, but maybe we can use other techniques, like maybe then a peak nasal inspiratory flow can be useful in that situation.
This is very interesting, and just because by using the acoustic rhinomanometry, we should always consider this dysfunctional morphological things that are inside the nose, and this is the fact why we should do a previous test before surgery. We are stressing much more during the last years on this clinical research and preoperative clinical assessment of a patient, because actually the trend is going much more on diagnosis and pharmaceutical treatment, and this is because of we believe and we got to a point in which we finally got the opinion and the fact that nasal mucosa and anatomy is very important, and why and when we are doing surgery, we actually change the anatomy inside of the nose, and that will lead to another point in which previous surgeon and previous surgery, the patient that has been already treated by surgery are difficult to assess. We are much more inside of the nose right now because of endoscopes, because of different preoperative imaging and imaging. And we are now approaching to those patients that has previously, that has been previously operated. And this makes our difficult new diagnosis, or basically those are not new diagnoses. These were actually the first correct diagnosis before surgery. So we are having a lot of emails and requests from patients. There's a big group that are made from patients that underwent surgery that are requesting us to talk more and more about clinical aspects and researches. And that's why we do believe that talking about example and different modalities of diagnosis for such problems and diseases has much importance than surgery. Another question that I would like to ask you, this is from Emirates. This is once again based on surgery. What about those patients that underwent laser surgery on the inferior turbinates? What are you suggesting any of those tests? And I do believe that that he's referring to those coblation technique that underwent under mucosa and those ones that are not affecting the mucosa.
Yeah, I not very not I don't have a lot of knowledge about those surgical techniques, but of course I heard about laser surgery for turbinoplasty. I think in those cases it will be preferable to choose a method to measure the nasal patency, which is less influenced by the anatomy of the nostril. Probably acoustic rhinometry is the one who is more influenced because, as I said, if you measure the volume 2-6, then you are measuring the specific distance at the end of the lower turbinate between the septum. So, if that is altered with the surgery, doesn't matter the method of the surgery, then we can have difficulties in interpreting the result. Maybe in that case, the active anterior rhinomanometry, which measures the resistance, but is less dependent on the specific anatomy, but on the whole resistance of the tube of the nostril, can be more reliable after the surgery. But this is my opinion. I don't have really any evidence to refer to about this.
About the last question I would like to ask is because of the short time that we have, due to the fact of the importance of the United Airway diseases and the correlation between the lower and the upper airway system, would you suggest any kind of immunotherapy, or would you like to suggest a treatment and a diagnosis in patients that are asthma uncontrolled?
Okay, for immunotherapy in uncontrolled allergen immunotherapy in uncontrolled asthma is not recommended in general. Now we have one product, this is the tablets for how does mites, and the indication you can prescribe the tablets either for allergic rhinitis or allergic asthma due to how does mites if the patient have a FEV1 higher than 70%. So from 70% to 80%, the patient will still remain in control, but you are still able to administer or to prescribe the treatment. But in general, I think that what we do in the clinic is we first, before prescribing immunotherapy, we control the asthma. So we get the patient to have control symptoms and a FEV1 at least higher than 80%, and after that, we prescribe allergen immunotherapy. That is the general recommendation. I don't know if you there was more questions in your comment. I can't remember. Apart from
no, basically we would like to ask what about performing another challenge in patients with asthma?
So, exactly. Yeah. I mean, in the acute position paper of 2018, they say that severe uncontrolled asthma or COPD are contraindications for a nasal challenge. But this was based on, I mean, the logics, of course, the logics tell you that. Why are you doing this if the patient is not controlled? But in the article we published that I saw afterwards, actually, it was even safe technique in patients with uncontrolled asthma. So there were 1,500 patients who had asthma symptoms, and in those 1,500, some were controlled and some were not controlled. I think that still is a good number, I mean, significant number of patients. But one thing is important. I mean, the main risk here is if the patient aspirates the allergen and it goes to the throat and the lower airway. That is the tricky point. So sure. You need, like, trained personnel to teach the patients how to do the procedure. And that's the reason why we use the micropipette, because then the nurse can put it in the lower, in the head of the lower lower turbinate, and it's more secure that the allergen will not go through the throat. With the spray, you are not that sure where you are putting the allergen because you don't see it, no? But of course, you can also perform the test safely with the allergen spray. But I think that is a very safe technique. The likelihood of having a bronchospasm, even in a patient with uncontrolled asthma, is very small. But if possible, I would control the asthma before performing the nasal challenge, if possible. If we are in the situation that the patient has uncontrolled asthma and we are still doubting if this asthma can have some allergic trigger, and of course, we are not performing a bronchial provocation because this is even more unsafe. You can say, okay, I can perform a nasal provocation in a patient with uncontrolled asthma to be 100% sure if the patient disease is related to allergens or not. I will stay say, okay, in those specific cases, you can still do it because the test is extremely, extremely safe with precautions that the patient doesn't swallow or inhale or not inhale, swallow the allergen. No?
Yes.
But I think that safety concerns shouldn't be an obstacle to perform the test because it's very safe. So it's like the results were very clear. Like I insist, like 11,500 procedures. This is.
This is an amazing number, actually. Exactly. It's kind of guaranteed. Thank you, Iman, because this, you practically talk about the whole procedure from the beginning. What are the articles that are could be referred? So please, all of the attendees, go and check those articles. Go ahead and sign up for the Iachi Juniors members. There's tons of activities that they are doing. The Iachi Juniors members just guaranteed, how to say, to continue the collaboration with the Association Asasano. And we recently discussed about a new few other things for the 2020. I just want to use these last minutes to express my gratitude to you, Iban, for the collaboration that we established last year, and we are keep continuing. And for the Iachi Juniors members, please sign up for the next meetings on the 2020s. We would like to guarantee also other grants. We are actually providing one grant every year for the attendance of the ERS Juniors meetings, and I do hope to have the possibility to provide other grants also for the Iachi Juniors. We will establish other ground rounds online and other meetings in places. And by that, I would like to invite all the participants and their colleagues for the segment two of our adherent first and 15th international ground rounds. It will start from the 1st of September to 15th of December 2019. This time it's going to be CME accredited, and more details are going to be published soon on our website, www.nasosano.it. A lot of faculty is going to participate, and we are also going to have a talk on in the international consensus on allergic rhinitis. This talk will be covered from Sarah Weiss from the USA. Another talk is going to be from surgery to clinical things in ENT and allergy. Thank you for your participation, Iban. It was very much appreciated. Go ahead, for all the attendants, go ahead. We will release and record the whole meeting, and we'll be able on our YouTube channel. I would like to congratulate you for the whole period of your presidential activity, Iban. And I also would like to thanks the president of the IACI for participating in our in one of our ground rounds. Thank you to all the attendants and the faculty member. I would like to invite you once again for the second segment, and see you soon.
Thank you to you, Buya. It has been a pleasure. See you.